I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett filed a federal antitrust lawsuit against the NCAA last week, charging that the penalties the governing body imposed on Penn State for its handling of the Jerry Sandusky child sex abuse scandal were unjustified, overly harsh, and punished the entire Commonwealth. The NCAA sanctioned the Nittany Lions with a $60 million fine, reduced football scholarships, banished the team from postseason games for 4 years, and vacated all the football wins under coach Joe Paterno. Here's what the governor said at his press conference last week.
On behalf of the citizens of Pennsylvania, the businesses here in State College in Center County and throughout Pennsylvania who are being harmed by this, that's why we're doing this. This is not a political case.
Some critics contend that Corbett's suit is all about politics and that the governor is using it to improve his standing among voters. He called the sanctions part of a corrective process last summer when they were first imposed. Penn State is not a party to this lawsuit. We begin our conversation with Matt Mitten to discuss the legal issues involved in this case. He's director of the National Sports Law Institute at Marquette University Law School. That's in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And Matt Mitten, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. My pleasure.
Is this an unusual lawsuit?
Well, yes, it certainly is. This is not the first time the NCAA has been sued for violating the antitrust laws, but all the prior suits have been very different in nature. There have been claims by either its member schools that its football television plan violated the antitrust laws. There's been a group of coaches who brought suits claiming that the so-called restricted earnings coaches rule was a violation, and then student athletes and schools have sued the NCAA for sanctions imposed as a result of violating their rules, largely student athlete or amateurism rules.
What the governor, though, is saying is that this these sanctions against Penn State have hurt the Commonwealth, not just people at Penn State, but the entire state. How would he prove that in court?
Well, what he's going to try to do, the state is the most direct victim of the alleged antitrust violations is certainly the university. And the antitrust laws are designed to compensate solely for economic loss caused by the anti-competitive effects of violations. So if we start with Penn State, the claim would be that not only do the sanctions hurt the football team's ability to compete on the field, but they have the adverse economic effect of hurting the university's ability to compete against other NCAAs for students, perhaps faculty members, grants, that sort of thing. By the governor's claims take that one step further. The claim is that there's a broader economic effect on the Commonwealth as a whole, and that raises some difficult standing problems. As a general rule, courts have limited the ability of indirect victims of antitrust violations to file antitrust suits. Courts want to ensure it's only those most directly affected. So that's going to be a significant issue in this case.
Well, and he was flanked by some business people when he had his press conference. And I would assume that then he has to prove, or I guess the state has to prove, that these business people were directly harmed by the punishment against Penn State?
Yeah, in economic terms. There was a suit filed about, it was roughly 25, 30 years ago, when the NCAA sanctioned Southern Methodist University with the so-called death penalty. They shut down their football program for a year, and I think SMU voluntarily didn't play for a second year. And there were a group of Southern Methodist alumni who challenged that. They said, well, the economic value of our degrees has been devalued as a result of this NCAA sanction. And the court said that they had no standing to bring the antitrust suit, that their interests were too indirectly affected. Similar to this case, SMU was not a party. The court said that SMU was the party most directly affected. They're not bringing the suit, that the alumni could not bring it on their behalf. The NCAA will likely raise the same argument, perhaps with a different result, because Penn State's a public university. It's an instrumentality, an arm of the state, and a court may well look at that and say, well, there's enough of an economic effect. If the university is affected, there's a sufficient effect on the state, therefore they're standing.
Do you think, though, that the governor has a credibility problem or might with the court in that he did call the sanctions when they were imposed last summer a corrective process, and now, of course, he's come out and said that they are unjustified and are overly harsh?
Well, the more difficult issue that I think the governor is going to face is the argument that the defense by the NCAA that the university agreed to these sanctions and that he was a member of the board of trustees or directors, and that the state ought not be permitted to bring suit on what is essentially on behalf of the university because it has agreed to the sanctions. So that certainly could be a more difficult burden to overcome than the standing issue.
Even going back to this financial or economic harm, and I was doing some reading about how many seats were filled for the Penn State games this season, and it looks like attendance might have been down by 5,000, 6,000, 7,000. Is there any way to prove that the reduced number of people going to Penn State games are as a result of this NCAA these sanctions?
Well, I would imagine economists could prove that. You might need to do a survey, but you would have to show the causal nexus. And the standard is, you know, more likely than not, the sanctions caused economic harm, including, you know, a substantial number of the 5,000 or 6,000 who didn't go to the game. It was because of the sanctions as opposed to something else. I mean, that could be done, but you know, the economists or others could come up with a method that would be, you know, relevant and material and a way of proving it.
One of the other charges from the governor is that Penn State did not violate any of the particular rules of the NCAA. Is he correct about that?
Well, I think that that is accurate. If you look at the NCAA's rules, they're really designed to do three or four things. One, there's rules in place to ensure the amateur nature of intercollegiate athletics. You know, the rule which says the only economic value that student athletes can receive for participating in college sports is, you know, the value of room, board, tuition, and books. Also designed to maintain the academic nature and integrity of intercollegiate sports, there are rules in place to promote competitive balance. And then really a fourth one, there's health and safety rules, but those are rules largely designed to protect the participants, the student-athletes themselves. And there really aren't any rules that specifically say that the university can be directly sanctioned for either the criminal or tortious conduct of those associated with its athletics program. So to that extent, yes. I mean, my understanding is that the NCAA's allegation was that this violated its unethical conduct rules, which really are designed to say things that, you know, you must comply with the rules and you've got to be truthful and cooperate with the NCAA when there's an investigation. So there isn't really a specific rule that was violated that covers this situation.
A final question, where do you think this case goes from here?
Well, I think that the NCAA will respond, and they're likely to say that the university's agreement to comply with the sanctions, that bars the suit. The standing issue will be raised. I think another issue that will be raised by the NCAA is that this is non-commercial economic regulation. Courts have given the NCAA virtually carte blanche to enact, you know, to internally regulate the sport, and they tell that is not subject to antitrust challenge. So the NCAA will argue that this is not unlike regulating the number of televised college football games or salaries of coaches. Those are things courts have characterized as commercial activity that is subject to antitrust challenge. The NCAA will say, no, this is much more similar to enforcement of student-athlete eligibility rules, amateurism rules, and the imposition of sanctions against coaches and student-athletes and others for violating them.
Well, Matt Mitten, thanks for joining us and getting our conversation started.
My pleasure.
And he's director of the National Sports Law Institute at Marquette University Law School. That's in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Listening in and joining us now is Gil Spencer. He's a longtime opinion columnist for the Daily Times of Delaware County, also a member of the paper's editorial board. Gil Spencer, officially nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Officially nice to be here.
And joining us by telephone, who has also been listening in, is Christine Brennan. She writes columns on national and international sports issues for USA Today. She's also a commentator for ABC News, PBS NewsHour, and NPR, also the author of a number of best-selling books. And Christine Brennan, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Well, it's my pleasure, Marty. Thank you very much for having me.
You're very welcome. I'm going to give you each a minute because we're almost up in a break here. But Christine Brennan, what is your, I guess, your most pointed critique of Governor Corbett's lawsuit?
Oh, it's an embarrassment. Embarrassment to the state, embarrassment to all those people in Pennsylvania and at Penn State who are starting to move forward. To drag everyone back, to tear the scab off the wound, as Matt, who I respect, we're both from the same hometown, Toledo, Ohio, as Matt said, Corbett signed on to this. He agreed to this back in July. He had a very long statement saying, basically, thank you, NCAA, we agree and we're moving forward. So it's laughable. I'm so embarrassed for Penn State, even though Penn State, thankfully, is not involved with this, but just for those who love it and want to move forward and realize the horrors of the worst scandal we ever have seen in the history of U.S. colleges and universities. And it's just a shame that Corbett, who was so involved as the Attorney General in stonewalling the investigation, now has come back in this big way.
Well, go ahead, Gil Spencer. I'm giving you a minute, I guess, to defend the governor. Go ahead.
Well, I hate to defend the governor because I think the accusation that politics are in play here is quite accurate. I don't doubt that for a minute, and it shouldn't be shocking to anyone that a politician would play politics. As far as the lawsuit being an embarrassment, I think that's not accurate either. If you asked and polled the citizens of Pennsylvania, they don't find the lawsuit to be an embarrassment at the moment.
There's a new poll that says
the polls show that they, by a decent majority, by the majority that the president got reelected, they support this lawsuit. Even the people who believe that who wrote very critically about how Penn State handled this, they believe that the NCAA overstepped, overreacted, and was punitive and abusive in its sanctions. And I think that's a fair reading of this.
Well, let me pick up on all of that, and we do need to take a very short break. Talking with Gil Spencer, the voice you just heard, longtime opinion columnist for the Daily Times of Delaware County, where he's a member of the paper's editorial board. And again, joining us by telephone, Christine Brennan writes columns on national and international sports issues for USA Today. And we are debating, talking about Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett's suit against the NCAA last week. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Where do you stand on this suit? Give us a call. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Fox Chase Cancer Center supports WHYY. 52 years ago, the Philadelphia chromosome was discovered in a Fox Chase laboratory. The Philadelphia chromosome was the first specific genetic abnormality linked to a specific cancer. Fast forward to today, and Fox Chase is offering a new diagnostic test for advanced cancers. Through next-generation DNA sequencing, tumor-specific genetic abnormalities now can be matched to precision drugs. More at foxchase.org. Fox Chase Cancer Center, now part of Temple Health.
Next time in Studio 360, what's the creative project you've been meaning to do for years?
This year, I will write a short story every month.
We're going to make it happen in 2013.
I've decided it's about time I fulfilled my promise.
The pressure's on.
And I'm resolving to get it done in 2013.
Your creative New Year's resolutions next time in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
2 years ago, Daniel Hernandez Jr. was hailed as a hero. He rushed to the aid of Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords, who was shot in broad daylight.
I appreciate the sentiment. I must humbly reject the use of the word hero because I am not one.
We look back on that tragic day in Tucson and to what's next for some of the people involved next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. We're talking about Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett's decision last week to sue the NCAA, saying the organization was too tough on Penn State for its handling of the Jerry Sandusky child sex abuse scandal. The university was fined $60 million and its football program was disciplined. And we're hearing from two people with two different perspectives, Gil Spencer and Christine Brennan. We want to hear from you, 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Christine, let me go back to you. And one of the arguments that in favor of what the governor said, and also a critique of the NCAA, and this is something I raised with Matt Mitten, which is that no particular, as heinous and horrible as what happened in Happy Valley, as we call it, no NCAA rules were directly broken. What do you make of that?
Marty, you know, with all due respect, I do disagree on that point. There is something called competitive advantage, and that is one of the many things the NCAA can try to determine if someone has cheated or kept things under wraps or did something to gain a competitive advantage. That's a big part of NCAA violations, as we all know, or as many people probably know. Well, I think you can make a very strong case that Penn State, by covering up the Jerry Sandusky horrors for, what, more than a decade, actually gained a great competitive advantage. If all this had leaked out sometime after the late 1990s and the early 2000s, can you imagine parents and their recruit and their young men who were recruits, how they would have reacted? I think that Joe Paterno actively and Graham Spanier and all of them actively participated in a cover-up that helped Penn State football. So I completely disagree. I think the NCAA is right on many things, including the fact this is the worst thing ever, and that it required unprecedented punishment. But I believe there's absolutely an NCAA violation, a big one, that Penn State committed.
Go ahead, Gil Spencer.
Well, I don't know that they got this competitive advantage by this conspiracy of silence, I think, is how the Free Report did it.
The Louis Free Report.
Yeah. I read that report twice, and, you know, I don't think the conclusions of that report are supported by the facts in it. And I think the jury's still out, although there has been a rush to judgment in this case about who's guilty of what and who did what. There are criminal trials.
Do you think Jerry Sandusky should be in prison?
Absolutely. Okay. I think that case was proved beyond a reasonable doubt. But we have two criminal cases coming up, and the guilt of those parties has not been proven. I don't think it's proven by the Free Report by any stretch. And it'll be interesting to hear what the testimony is in that case. As far as the rest of it's concerned, I going back to what Professor Mitten said, with all due respect to him, I talked to an antitrust attorney named David Balto. He's Washington-based. He was with the Antitrust Division of the Justice Department and with the Federal Trade Commission. And he told me he thinks this is a very mainstream antitrust suit. He says that the NCAA is famous for coming up with policies and after the fact justifications for its actions. I think this case is mm-hmm. is much stronger than people are giving it credit for.
Well, let me go back to you, Christine Brennan, and actually quote the governor from July and then quote him from last week. The governor said in July, "We have taken a monster off the streets, and while we will never be able to repair the injury done to these children, we must repair the damage to this university. Part of that corrective process is to accept the serious penalties imposed today by the NCAA on Penn State University and its football program." Last Wednesday, he said this: "They have used," this would be the NCAA, "used Penn State's tarnished public image as an opportunity to force the university to endure harsh, unjustified, and unprecedented punishments. This is a criminal matter, not a violation of NCAA rules." Now, Gil was saying he's a politician. This is politics. There's no getting around that. But are you comfortable with this description of that politics might be at the root of this?
I, not being an expert, of course, on Pennsylvania politics, I'm a sports columnist.
I understand.
Of course. It would seem to me, yes, that Corbett is playing politics, except for the fact that Kathleen Kane, and Gil would know this far better than I, but your attorney general-elect, Kathleen Kane, a Democrat, of course, Corbett's a Republican, she takes over January 15th. She ran, as I understand it, on many things, one of them a pledge to investigate why it took Corbett and company 3 years, nearly 3 years, and I don't think we can say that enough, nearly 3 years to bring Sandusky, charges against Sandusky. So, I don't know. It seems like the folks in Pennsylvania voted for Kathleen Kane. I guess, as a sports columnist, but as right. someone, to me, this has gone into our culture. And, again, I look at this, of course, from a national view, except I'm from Ohio. I'm a Big Ten person, and we were huge Penn State fans with Joe Pa, linebacker U, the way they did things, the helmets, the jerseys. So I am was predisposed to be very much for Penn State, and that's why I am just so struck by how one state seems to be in such denial, and again, sorry for the harsh words, but I'll say them. I've written this for almost a year now, more than a year, I guess, since November 5th of 2011 when the story broke. 49 states are horrified at what is going on inside of Pennsylvania, and I apologize for saying it.
Well, let me go back to you, Gil. I mean, what's interesting is Penn State is not a party to the governor's antitrust lawsuit.
No, they've agreed to these sanctions. They agreed to the sanctions with a gun to their head. Rodney Erickson said, I call him the accidental president of Penn State. He said if they didn't agree to the sanctions, they would have gotten the death penalty. They were threatened with it, and that's pretty
terms,
clear.
That means what?
That means that they could have had their football seasons canceled and not be allowed to participate at all. And so that's a pretty strong threat to have to deal with. I would ask Christine only whether or not she's read the lawsuit.
Yes, I have.
And did you find nothing in it that makes you appalled at how the NCAA handled this?
Oh, I've been as critical of the NCAA on many issues, Gil, over the years as there probably have been issues.
Yeah.
Are there potential things to discuss? Sure. As you may know, my column and everything I've talked about the last few days has been more about the cultural view of it. I'm not a legal expert, and just the Barney Fife aspect of Corbett's leadership of your state. And again, I apologize. I wish we weren't talking about this. Boy, do I wish we weren't talking about this.
Don't apologize. I think it's a fun conversation.
Well, no, but I mean, it's a horrible thing. That's right.
And it's not just 49 other states that are horrified and disgusted with what happened and the things that Jerry Sandusky did. There are a lot of people in Pennsylvania who feel very much the same way. But we want to make sure that the innocent aren't punished with the guilty. And I think that's a bedrock principle of...
So where was Corbett in July? And why did the Board of Trustees sign on, and why is Penn State thankfully not saying a word about this because they're moving ahead? Do you understand how embarrassing this looks to the rest of the nation?
No, I don't. It is not embarrassing to the citizens of Pennsylvania, as I said before.
For a small majority of them.
A larger majority than the minority.
Well, and that doesn't shock me. I mean, I guess when football is king, one of the things that is covering sports for over 30 years, I really thought people had football in perspective, within the realm of football being crazy. The fact that if you read Silent No More, the wonderful book that I just finished by Aaron Fisher, Victim Number One, about how the love of Penn State permeated down into the high school where the principal and the guidance counselor failed to do their jobs to start protecting this young man who was so brave and so honest. I would hope Penn State people would be so horrified to say, let's get rid of football for a couple years and clean up our house, for heaven's sakes. Things were so out of whack, Gil. So out of whack.
Go ahead, Gil.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you said a victim number one. Victim number four has an attorney as well. And by the way, I'd like to say that the victims in this case, the real victims, the children, have recourse, and everybody
believes.
In
criminal courts.
Yes, in civil court,
right.
and they are probably going to see million-dollar, multi-million-dollar settlements, and they will deserve it. But I also say this: victim number four was his attorney came out and spoke for him and said he was horrified by the level of the sanctions against Penn State. He didn't think they were fair, and he didn't think they were right.
Rowe is now against Roe versus Wade. We don't put much
hold on 1 second. But so, Gil, what do you think the NCAA should have done?
They should have, if they had real guts, they would have said, this was a terrible, horrible situation. We see that Penn State has has come forward and is handling it. They have hired Louis Free to investigate it. They are taking measures upon themselves, and they should have admitted that this was beyond their jurisdiction. And that wouldn't...
And impose no punishments, no
absolutely
sanctions, no,
nothing. Now, here's what I think is going to happen, because this case is going to the Middle District of Pennsylvania. The judge there is Yvette Kane. She's a Clinton appointee. And so she has no reason to protect the governor for political reasons or this lawsuit. But that district is known as the Rocket Docket, and they move cases. And in talking to David Balto, who is an expert on this kind of law, not so much an expert on middle state, but middle district, he thinks that she is going to she will move this case. She will fast track this case. And if this case is found to have merit, if this case isn't dismissed out of hand, which is what the NCAA hopes will happen, if they find that the governor has standing, that the Pennsylvania has standing, I see the NCAA settling the case.
Mm.
I see the NCAA dropping these sanctions down significantly. That would be a good result here.
Christine, let me go back. And I read the suit last night in preparation for today's show. And one of the things that the governor, the state, the suits alleges is that the NCAA is part of this culture, has created this culture that it has then, you know, criticized, and in the case of Penn State, sanctioned, where, you know, everything is all about sports. Is that a fair critique, you think, of the NCAA?
Oh, sure. I mean, I think we could spend the next, 10 shows of yours critiquing the NCAA
we
in a
probably
negative
could.
Way.
Yes.
Sure. And as I said, I've been very critical of their attempts to try to pay athletes, which there's something, a law called Title IX, that if you play football players, you have to pay field hockey players. So it is 2013 now. So yeah, I think, oh, absolutely. My comments, I hope, are not being taken specifically against the lawsuit, although I am against the lawsuit. My comments, I hope, are more of a, at least from my column the other day, a step back to say, why not just start to take your punishment and move on? And as I said, it is just appalling to me how football has such a hold on Pennsylvania. It shocked me. I mean, it does, clearly. End of conversation. That, for example, my alma mater, Northwestern, I guarantee you we would have shut down football for 5 years in absolute horror over what we had created. And why in the world is there no one? Again, though, Penn State, we do know this. The Board of Trustees doesn't believe in this lawsuit.
Mm.
So there is a Barney Fife aspect to all this. And all joking aside, Corbett, I mean, I really do think he needs to be looked at for sitting on that case while he was running for office.
And hold on one second. I just need to reintroduce you both just so our listeners can keep up with what we're talking about. Christine Brennan writes columns on national and international sports issues for USA Today. She's also a commentator for a number of broadcast organizations, including ABC News, PBS NewsHour, and NPR. Gil Spencer is a longtime opinion columnist for the Daily Times of Delaware County, a member of the paper's editorial board. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me ask you, Gil, and perhaps an unfair question, but looking at the abuse that took place by Jerry Sandusky, the numbers of victims involved, how long it lasted, you know, who seemed to have suspicions about what's going on. Some have described it as the worst scandal in college sports history.
I just heard it described that way.
Exactly. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, in a sense. Although it in some ways, the football program is almost in periphery of this. As Jerry Sandusky was not an employee of Joe Paterno's or the Penn State University at the time all this came up. He had already left, and he was running the second mile, and he had access to the university.
Where some of the abuse took place.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I'm not suggesting people didn't make a lot of bad decisions in this case. They have been made. You can maybe include the governor in that. I'm not sure as attorney general, but I would also say when we talk about the politics of this, let's not pretend that the new attorney general and who ran on this wasn't involved in this and doing things for political reasons. I'll be interested to see. I'm all for this investigation. I'll be interested to see where it goes. But back to the culture at Penn State, the idea that somehow Penn State has been more corrupted by the culture of football than some of these other schools seems absurd to me. I have not been, until this scandal broke, I was not a Penn State fan. I wasn't a big Joe Pa idolizer. It wasn't something that was, I paid a lot of attention to. But I would say in the months since then, and talking to people who know Penn State and have gone there and care about it, it's not just a football school. It's one of the great public institutions in America, and it was as part of Joe Paterno's legacy to make it that. I mean, he made the university focus on that because that was important to him. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Sorry. I know you said that you felt that football was maybe on the periphery of this story. I couldn't disagree more. If we had found out about this sooner as a nation and, culture, whatever, there would have been yellow crime scene tape around the whole football facility.
Well,
this occurred in the showers. I mean, how in the world this occurred on bowl trips? Jerry Sandusky had wide range to use the athletic facilities for his purposes. Obviously, they knew about it.
Paterno knew what was going on,
and then allowed him for a decade to come back in with little boys and travel with the team.
You say he obviously knew about it. I don't know that it's obvious that Joe Paterno knew that Jerry Sandusky was a pedophile. I don't think anybody.
Oh, come on!
Tell me. Don't tell me to come on. I've talked to a lot of people about this who are from Happy Valley, who are from Penn State, and they were shocked and didn't believe it until it was proven to them. But they were familiar.
But could that not be denial?
Sure. Absolutely it could be denial. But denial is, a psychological state of mind. And to say they obviously knew about it is not necessarily accurate.
Well, Christine, let me go back to you because part of the sanctions was not just the $60 million, the money to be used for help for children who have been abused in this state and in others. But there are also punishments against the current team, the current system. They obviously have a new coach. Does that seem fair to criticize today's football players for something that was done by administrators or a previous coach?
Marty, that's the reason that I wrote early on, and others did too. I wasn't the only one by any means nationally, but where I said they should take the one-year death penalty. If Penn State had actually sanctioned itself, had actually been the adult in the room, and said, you know what, this is so bad, we're not going to wait for the NCAA to punish us. We're going to do it ourselves because we realize how terrible this is under the auspices of football. And we will do a one-year death penalty. I'm going to guess, we don't know, we'll never know. Mm-hmm. I'm going to guess that would have been good enough for the NCAA. And you know what that means? That means then that, of course, people could have kept their eligibility. If they were sophomores, they would have been sophomores in 2013, that kind of thing. Penn State would be back in business completely without the shackles that you just described. Another terrible decision made by the leadership of Penn State. Every chance to go down the right path or the wrong path, from not taking away Sandusky's Penn State gear, so he did his perp walks and wrestling outfits and just horrifying Penn State PR, and, of course, going back to Graham Spanier, defending Curley and Schultz right off the bat when he knew for at least a week what was going on, calling these things baseless and groundless. I mean, you just couldn't make this up. It's just absolutely disgusting and horrifying. But, yeah, it's tough stuff that they're dealing with, Marty. Is it fair to the freshman who just signed on or the sophomore who just signed out? No. But you could say the same thing for USC and Ohio State and all kinds of other teams that get sanctioned.
We have to take a very short break, then we'll get back to our conversation. We do have some callers who want to join us as well. 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Princeton Academy of the Sacred Heart announces an open house Saturday, January 12th at 10 a.m. Princeton Academy takes advantage of the growing body of research on boys' developmental differences and consequently educational needs. A junior kindergarten through 8th grade independent school for boys, the Academy embraces the nature of boys and nurtures their development. The school's curriculum is designed to engage boys and inspire them to explore, discover, and learn. More information at 609-924-8143 or princetonacademy.org.
As a result of the Civil War, about one out of every three people in the South were suddenly freed from slavery. Bruce Levine writes about why the Civil War was America's second revolution and how it transformed the South and American politics in his new book, The Fall of the House of Dixie. We'll talk with Levine on the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Neoconservative Bill Kristol is said to be the architect of the Republican Party. What are his plans to rebuild after the past election and fiscal cliff battle? Also, Hugo Chavez is expected to be sworn in this week as president of Venezuela, but he's sick in Cuba. What happens now? That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane, and we are debating Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett's decision to sue the NCAA last week on behalf of the Commonwealth, claiming that the governing body for college sports went overboard in penalizing Penn State in response to the Jerry Sandusky child molestation scandal. Our guests are Gil Spencer, longtime opinion columnist for the Daily Times of Delaware County, where he's a member of the paper's editorial board, and Christine Brennan. She writes columns on national and international sports issues for USA Today. And we have, looks like Anthony Lubrano joining us. And Anthony, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thank you. You're asking me to join you.
Well, that's very good. And if you could do me a favor, only because we've got a lot of callers, if you could make your statement in about a minute to a minute 20, that would be great. Go ahead.
Well, first, with respect to this specific issue, politics aside, I'm glad that the governor has come around to see my point of view. I've been arguing since July that the NCAA had no authority to act in this matter. This is a criminal matter to be adjudicated in the courts.
And I should add that you're on the Board of Trustees at Penn State.
Correct.
Okay.
I was elected, began my term in July. With respect to the situation, though, I've listened to Christine, I've read all of her work, and I appreciate her perspective, but I would encourage her to actually look very carefully, for example, at the Free Report. I think those people who ran off assuming that the conclusions reached by Louis Free were correct are mistaken. Due process hasn't run its course, and I think in time that will be proven.
Well, let me give Christine Brennan a chance to respond. Thank you for the call to Radio Times. Christine, what do you say in response?
Well, thanks, Anthony, and I appreciate you reading everything. That's very nice of you, especially in these economic times for journalism and newspapers and websites. I guess when he said people ran off and took the Free Report, well, he said he's on the Board of Trustees. Well, the Board of Trustees ran off and took the Free Report and took it to heart. So I guess that's interesting.
Well, Christine, that's a very valid point. I was seated July 1st. My first meeting was July 12th. Mm. I have chided my colleagues on the board for not having yet had an honest intellectual discussion with respect to that report, and they don't intend to. Unfortunately, political correctness is the theme of the day, and rather than try to follow what we're all entitled to, which is due process, I think the notion of just putting this behind us as quickly as we can is in fact the approach that's been taken. I don't agree with it, but you certainly make a valid point when our leaders stand up in front of the country and say we accept the findings of a report that we haven't had an opportunity to debate. It's unfortunate.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. We could go on, but I do want to make sure we get some other callers in. Anthony Lubrano, thanks for the call to Radio Times.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Go ahead. I would just say Anthony's being very polite there. I think the administration at Penn State showed an astounding degree of gutlessness in the way they handled this. I can understand a business decision, the idea of wanting to get it behind them. But, the idea that they accepted that report, and it didn't, I read it more than once, and, it just doesn't deliver the goods. Mm. And it reads like a prosecutor's brief, and it's a case that hasn't been made. It's like an opening statement. So, I think this story is not over. We've got trials to flesh out some more of this story. And I would recommend people check out John Ziegler's The Framing of Joe Paterno. You can call it up on YouTube, and it does a pretty good job of getting down on and getting out the other side of this argument.
Let me get, looks like Scott from Newark, Delaware, to join us on Radio Times. And Scott, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thank
Hi
you. I'd like to make the point that the damage that was done by Penn State damaged the entire NCAA organization, and that's why they have the right to inflict sanctions on Penn State. The credibility of the NCAA, Penn State being such a high-profile football school, inflicted damage to a certain degree on every other football program and every other member of the NCAA in general. So they have every right to inflict penalties and sanctions on Penn State for what occurred at that school.
Well, Scott, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. I'm tossing that first to you, Gil, and then Christine, I'd like to have you weigh in as well.
We'll see if they have that right. We'll see in a court of law whether a judge agrees with you on that. The NCAA has a lot of power, and it has broad power, but it doesn't have unlimited power. And we're about to see, you know, how limited that power is or if it's limited. I think this case, the SMU case, was very different from this one, where you had a school that at least admittedly broke NCAA rules, concrete rules. This case is unprecedented in the fact that they didn't. And the NCAA, the President Emmert, he admits to that. They couldn't find one rule that the school violated, and they had to go into the bylaws and the penumbras of ethics and whatnot to bring their sanctions and to justify it. And I don't know that that's going to hold up.
Christine, hold on, because I want to get Jerry from Downingtown to join us, because it looks like his point is the opposite of Scott's point. And Jerry, go ahead. You are on Radio Times. There we go. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I love Tom Corbett. He's right. In the past, the NCAA has only done recruiting violations, payments to players of parents, cars. They've never inflicted anything in moral codes of the administration or the management of the school. Now, they've gone totally off track. They've punished players for things they didn't do, and they are out of bounds. They've never done anything like this to any school anywhere, and their chief concern has been recruiting violations and payments, which is something that's never happened before.
Well, Jerry, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And, Christine, I know you're not here to defend the NCAA, but nonetheless, I'd be curious what you say in response to Jerry.
Well, Jerry's point about that the NCAA has never done anything like this, well, there's never been a story like this in college sports, ever. So it's extraordinary, and it's extraordinary punishment, I think that. And then another point for both of the callers, you know, James Schultz, the Commonwealth General Counsel, was up there at that press conference the other day, and he was talking about all the pain and was inflicted, and it sounded like the pleadings of the paranoid when he said, you know, they want to damage Penn State so others can do better. Well, that is preposterous. And then this notion, of course, that the people, the mom and pop people who were behind him but then wouldn't speak, even though every journalist wanted, well, can you give us an example of how your business has been hurt, you know, saying, well, you know, we can't go to bowl games. Well, bowl games would be outside the state. I mean, I hate to say it, I'm a broken record here, Marty. It's just beyond, head scratching. And I wish it weren't so. But, we'll find out. I'm not saying the NCAA might not lose or whatever. Right. I'm talking about the image. Why continue to bring this up? The more this is brought up, the more people talk about it, the more it embarrasses Penn State and Pennsylvania, and the recruits start to wonder. I guess if Pennsylvania wants to keep talking about it, we'll keep talking about it, but I sure don't know why they just don't want it to go away.
Gil, anything you want to add to that?
It would be nice for it to go away in some sense, but, you know, you don't tell an innocent man that he shouldn't appeal or somebody who thinks that their sentence is unfair and unjust, even if they are guilty. I there are a lot of journalists and people who've covered this story who agree that these penalties and these sanctions were over the top. They were unprecedented by the admission of the man who imposed them. And, you know, there is something to be said for due process. There is something to be said for following your own rules. Mm. And if an organization, a trade group like the NCAA can get away with that without being challenged, because people just want it to go away, I think that would be the biggest mistake of all.
But I'm curious about your response to something Christine said, which is that Penn State should have, in a sense, sanctioned itself.
Well,
does that Does that make more sense to you than the NCAA?
And Christine suggested, and I don't know, maybe she knows more than I do, but I didn't know that there was such an offer on the table, that Penn State would say we'd get out of football for a year and the NCAA would agree not to do anything. I don't know that such an offer is on the table.
Or even just to do it to itself, no matter what the NCAA.
And boy, I mean, you know, if you've watched Penn State in this whole thing, they have done nothing but, you know, beaten themselves up. And you know, talked about how they want to help the victims and they want to do this and want to do that. And, you know, I take that, you know, as a good faith attempt of guilt and shame, even to the extent where it might not be justified. We'll see how justified it is as these cases unfurl.
Let me see what looks like Harry from Glen Mills, what Harry has to say. Go ahead, Harry. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, we're not embarrassed. Gil's right. We're looking for due process. We base it on the facts, not these emotional conclusion jumping things. It's a criminal case. The Board of Trustees screwed up. Joe Paterno and the others have not been proven guilty, and we will never give up until the facts are out.
And who's the we, Harry?
Penn Staters. I'm a
Penn Staters,
class of 1964 degree in chemistry. I don't jump to conclusions.
Okay, well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Christine, what do you say in response to Harry?
Oh, I respect completely what he's saying, and I think it goes right to what I've been saying, you know, this whole time, Marty, which is that clearly Pennsylvanians have this entirely different view of this than the rest of the nation. They have every right to have that view. Obviously, I'm aghast that if you just don't let it go away. I mean, just accept your punishment. That's something you learn as a child early on, and especially because the university, of course, isn't a party to this suit. Do you realize, folks, how ridiculous that looks, that the governor's going off willy-nilly, and this notion of self-punishment, the idea of a death penalty, you know, Pennsylvania, the Penn State people, Gil, I will disagree with you that they did, you know, they've done, you know, the contrition and all that. Oh, my goodness. When Miami of Florida penalizes itself by takes itself out of bowl games, not 1 year, but two, when Miami of Florida is leading the way on ethics and Penn State is sitting there going to a bowl game last year, a terrible decision for the nation to show that they hadn't learned one thing. Let's celebrate Penn State football and all that Jerry Sandusky, you know, all the free reign he had in the football program. Why not punish yourself by not going to a bowl game? Show the nation, show the NCAA that you get it. Miami of Florida is doing that, and Penn State didn't, and then didn't self-punish with the year death penalty. Shame on Penn State.
Well, Gil, let me ask you something else, and this gets a little bit into the weeds, but you read the lawsuit, as did I, and a lot of other people as well, including Christine, and one of the charges from the governor is that these sanctions could increase tuitions at Penn State, could hurt the status of Penn State as a first-rate university. But what's interesting is this is the same governor who wanted to cut funding for Penn State. I mean, does that put him a little bit on thin ice in terms of that very direct criticism?
Yeah, sure. Why not? He's pinched pennies as the governor, and I think that the state pays funds 7% of Penn State's budget, which is a chunk of money that they need and want. But you know, tuitions and whatever else is really what drives Penn State's. As a going concern. I put the governor's motives aside in this. I mean, Terry Madonna was on top of that as well after my column. I take no credit. But he said he may be right for the wrong reasons. And fine. You know, I think it's fair to criticize the governor for playing politics. I think it's fair to criticize Kathleen Kane for playing politics. It's fair to accuse politicians of playing politics, but there's a level of sanctimony that is thrown out in this case from the NCAA end and others that I find disturbing and offensive. I think that it's all about the kids and all this stuff.
But what is wrong with that? I mean, we're talking about children who are being
and
abused.
They are, exactly
horrifically abused
when it was investigated, because these are very tough cases to prove and handle, and there are false accusations at times, and prosecutors will tell you how tough these cases are, and that children were abused, is a horrible thing, and yet when it comes to not just the punishments, but when it comes to making the children whole in some sort of way, there is a forum to do that.
But there's also $60 million. I mean, that's also part of the judgment against Penn State.
Right.
To help children.
Yeah. That's a lot of money.
It is.
And whether that, you know, whether that's going to go to organizations that, you know, do a great job at that, I don't know. It'll be the NCAA that gets to decide that if they get to, you know, get that money and get their hands on that money in the long term. But the idea that just because of the heinousness of the crimes, you'll see this all the time with prosecutors, will say, this is a heinous crime, so convict this person. Let's make sure that person is A, guilty of the crime, and let's punish them accordingly, not abusively.
Well, we could go on. Christine, we have about a minute. I'm going to just give you the last word. What are your final thoughts as we close out this hour?
Well, I certainly think first and foremost of the victims, and abuse is one word we could use. I think we should use a more accurate term. These boys were raped in the Penn State facilities by one of the biggest names in the history of Penn State football, Jerry Sandusky. The link with Penn State football and this tragic, awful, horrible case is undeniable. And I hope that everyone in Pennsylvania does the right thing. I think Penn State's leadership is finally doing the right thing by moving forward and by telling Corbett that they're not part of this lawsuit. We'll find out what happens. As a journalist, I'll keep covering it. But I will never forget what occurred under the auspices of that mighty Penn State football to boys like Aaron Fisher and his great book and so many others. I hope that people in Pennsylvania remember that and don't get caught up in all of this other stuff.
Well, I appreciate both of you joining us today on Radio Times. Christine Brennan, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Marty.
You're very welcome. And Gil Spencer, thank you very much as well.
Thanks.
A very good discussion on Radio Times. And again, Christine Brennan writes columns on national and international sports issues for USA Today. And you can read Gil Spencer. He's a longtime opinion columnist for the Daily Times of Delaware County. He's also a member of the paper's editorial board. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times to find out more about this program. And I did post a question on our Facebook page about this particular show. We'd love to hear from you. And again, that's WHYY.org/Radio Times. Go to our Facebook page. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. But stay with us. We'll be right back.